Thank you for tuning in to the best parenting show on the internet, Post Daily Dose.
So, I'm excited for this day, especially because we have a fantastic keynote speaker. How many have heard of Brian Post? Look at all those hands, Brian. So Brian Post is one of America's foremost child behavior experts and founded the Post Institute for Family-Centered Therapy in 1999. The Post Institute works with adults, children, and families struggling with early life trauma and the impact on the development of the mind and body system. The Post Institute has published over 100 books, DVDs, CDs, MP3s, webinars, and articles on the topic of parenting children who have experienced pre-birth and early trauma life. I would encourage everyone here to visit Brian's website, which is thepostinstitute.com. Brian has worked in the trenches for many years with children as well as training parents and professionals. He holds 3 degrees in the field of social work, a bachelor degree in social work from East Central University, a master of social work from the University of Texas, and a doctorate degree in social work from Columbus University. Please help welcome our keynote speaker, Brian Post.
Good morning. Good morning. 1999, I was so young then. I feel so old now. Gosh, joints are a little more rusty than they used to be. Thanks for having me in Grand Junction. This is fantastic. I don't think that I have been to Grand Junction before. And it is a beautiful little community. I mean, you guys are doing some really cool stuff here. And I'm actually streaming this on Facebook Live, so now the world's gonna know. And there's gonna be all these people coming, and you're probably gonna have to build border walls or something. It's gonna be a big controversy. It's gonna be all my fault. So I've never, in 20 years of speaking, I've never spoken at a communication summit. And I think that that is a very cool thing, because communication is an essential key to reducing foster care placements, adoption disruptions, disgruntled foster parents, burnout, caseworkers. I mean, it's really important. And I think we take communication for granted. So I'm excited to be able to share this little talk with you today. And so the title of the talk is Connecting the Two Most Important Forces in the Lives of Children in the Welfare System: the social workers and the foster parents. Two most important forces. You all make these children's security, their foundation, their future possible. And it is such a big responsibility, because children who are in the child welfare system are not easy children. Children who are in the child welfare system have experienced trauma. And when you've experienced trauma, it changes your brain, and it also changes your emotions and your behaviors. Now, I actually came out here on Wednesday and spent some time down on Main Street with a few friends, and then have been out in Mack, Colorado yesterday, working with family. So Wednesday evening and all day yesterday. And that's something I used to do a lot of. That was the majority of my early career. And so when Joni says I spent a lot of time working in the trenches, well, I've traveled around the world working with families in their homes. So I stay with them, and we do really intense emotional work. And it's been a while since I've done a consultation, a family consultation is what I call them. Yesterday, I was exhausted. I was tired. It was a long day working with a really sweet and unique 16-year-old adopted child. And we had some really cool breakthroughs, and the family's in a really good place. And I think one day you guys can see this little girl on American Idol or something, because she is really something special and something unique. But it's interesting, because the journey of this child to this family began with poor communication. not just poor communication, but traumatic communication. A professional told the earlier adoptive parents, this is a child who's been in the system since essentially she was an infant, off and on, and then she was adopted the first time when she was 5. And a professional told her parents, her adoptive parents at the time, they were seeking help. They told them that this child could not be helped, that they would be better off just forgetting this child, leaving her in this placement, and then going on and starting their lives anew. So a professional said that to two parents trying to seek help about a child. Kind of like, just leave this little puppy with us, and we'll train and take it from here. And so then what happened is a semi-truck pulled up at this treatment facility, put this little girl in the back of the cab on the semi-truck. She's 8 years old. They had not told her anything. She had been jumping on a trampoline. The semi-truck pulls up. The adults put her in the semi-truck, and the truck driver drives off. Drives off. And this is warranted by professionals. She's 8 years old. She kicks and she screams and she kicks and she screams because she doesn't know what the hell is going on. And he drives her through the night to some ranch somewhere. And she's dropped off with two respite parents, where they essentially put her through penitentiary-style boot camp for the next 5 to 6 months. And what was really cool about this little girl is she said that when she was kicking and screaming, the truck driver was laughing. And she finally realized that if he wasn't going to tell her where he was taking her, that he wasn't, or anyone else, was not going to get to know her. And she said, I just shut down. And I thought that was the coolest thing. Because when do 8-year-olds have the emotional, cognitive, intellectual, spiritual capacity to say, I'm not going to just let the world treat me however they want to treat me. I'm not going to just let adults treat me however they want to treat me. And she said, I just shut down. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't hold up when it's time to be in relationship. And luckily, she raised enough hell with those professional respite parents that they were happy to push her off on some other family. And so an organization sent out an email, I think to, it was a church organization sent out an email to like 300 people, and two families responded. And one of them, the one I worked with yesterday, is the one who went on to parent this little girl and have been parenting her for the last 8 years. But it's not been easy. And the day before yesterday, Wednesday evening, when I went out there and started spending time with them, she kept saying to me, I'm really good. I'm really good at manipulating. I'm really good at figuring out what people want and telling them what they want. She said, I usually can chew up most therapists. And I said, that's cool. And God bless you for being able to do that. For what you've been through, I don't blame you. I think that's fantastic. And so she kind of said that probably 3, 4, 5 times. And then I finally said to her, you know what? You know what you're really telling me? You're really telling me that you've learned how to become what everyone else wants. Because it helps you stay safe. But more than that, you've learned to become what everyone else wants and say what everyone else wants to hear because you think you're bad. You think everything you've gone through since you were born is your fault. You've taken all the responsibility for all the adults that you've encountered. And she welled up a little tear in her eye. She said, you got one tear. You're not going to get any more. And I said, I don't want your tears. I'm not here for your tears. I'm not here to crack you or anything else. I'm here to show you that you are okay. Your feelings are okay. You matter. You are not bad. You are not bad. What if it wasn't you that was bad? What if it was all the other adults that have been in your life that were screwed up? And I use an explicit word. What if it wasn't you? What if it was all those other adults? What if it was all those other professionals? She said, that couldn't possibly be. How could that be? There's just me. There's just me. And I said, well, how many therapists have you worked with? She said, at least 20. And I said, no other therapist has told you that maybe it wasn't you? What if it wasn't you? What if it was all of us adults who just couldn't figure out what you needed? And because we couldn't figure out what you needed, we made it your fault. We made it your fault. We made you the bad one because we couldn't dig deep and face our own shit and our own pain and learn how to do things differently so we could provide better for you. She had never heard that before. And she thought, wow. And before we were all said and done, she was in her mom's arms, telling her that she wanted her to be her mother. And before she said that, as she was crying, she said, it's so hard to tell you, I want you to be my mom. This is a woman who's been raising her for 8 years. She said, it's so hard to tell you I want you to be my mom because every mom in my life has left me. And if I tell you I want you to be my mom, you're probably gonna move too. This is a 16-year-old child. 16. And then I can't even tell you the extent of the mom's trauma and the extent of the dad's trauma. We get so focused on the kids that we serve that we don't pay attention to our own histories, our own lives, our own experiences. And when we don't look at our own lives and our own histories and our own experiences, we're missing the boat from the jump. From the very beginning, I'm working on a new book. It's called Trauma-Informed Handbook. And I did a trauma-informed certification. And my first module in my training is where we miss the mark. We miss the mark when we start talking about trauma-informed. When we start focusing on everyone else. Because trauma-informed begins with us. It begins with our experiences. It begins with our understanding of ourselves. It begins with our understanding of our history and how we see the world. That's where trauma-informed begins. If trauma-informed begins on the way the lights are on and the colors in the room and the experiences of the children, if that's where trauma begins, then you're already off on the wrong track. Trauma-informed has to start with us. With us. Because we set the foundation for children. We set the foundation for children's healing. And how many years in child welfare have we been talking about communication between parents and children? Or between social workers and children? It's about time we talk about communication between social workers and foster parents and social workers and adoptive parents. Because that's where it starts. Because if you guys collapse in your communication, the kid is lost. They're just going to go to another home. Placements fail when adults fail to communicate and support one another. That's why placements fail. Placements don't fail because of bad children. Placements fail because of adults who will not dig deep enough to figure out how to communicate better with one another and support one another passionately enough to help provide what these children need. That's why placements fail. So I'm glad I'm a part of this summit. The definition of communication: to impart or exchange information. That is communication, to impart or exchange information. So over the years, I have become more and more obsessed with the words I use and the words people use. If we start thinking about communication from the root, and I like to work from the root. I like to work from the root up. I don't like to work out in the leaves. I like to start at the root because that's where it all begins. If we look at that word communication, to impart or exchange information, then what exactly, when it comes to the lives of these children and one another, do we need to be imparting and exchanging? We need to impart and exchange everything. We need to be an open book. But it's so difficult to be an open book, isn't it? It's so difficult to be an open book. Do you know why? One reason. Because of fear. Fear is what keeps us closed. And when fear keeps us closed, we cannot be open to love. There are only two primary emotions, love and fear. Those are our only two primary emotions. Everything else arises from love or from fear. Anger arises from fear. Depression arises from fear. Jealousy arises from fear. Frustration, resentment, happiness, joy, understanding, compassion, acceptance arises from love. Those are your only two primary emotions. So what you think is an angry foster parent, or what you think is a condescending social worker, is really just a scared and stressed out foster parent or a scared, stressed out social worker. That's all. And our inability to impart information is because of stress. We get stressed and we get scared. We become stressed and scared, and then we don't exchange. And that's where we begin going down the wrong path. So who are we serving? Obviously, we're serving the children, but we're also serving one another. We're serving one another. Because by serving one another, we are serving the children. When we fail to serve one another, and when we just focus on serving the children, we're already missing the boat. What's the number one thing that keeps us from effective communication? Stress. Stress is the one barrier to effective communication. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to give you a little scientific finding, and then I'm going to show you how it works in the brain. And I want you to write this down because it's so important. And I have probably said this not less than 500 times. And I'm going to say to you, I'm going to tell you this five times because you're not going to write it down the first three times I say it, because in your head you're thinking, I'm going to remember this. But I'm telling you, you're not. That's why I'm telling you, write it down, because it's that important. Because in 20 years, it's one of the most important foundational aspects of everything that I do. When you get this, relationships start changing. If schools could get what I'm about to tell you, entire school systems could change. Stress causes confused and distorted thinking and suppresses the short-term memory. Stress causes confused and distorted thinking and suppresses the short-term memory. The moment you become stressed, you are not thinking clearly and you cannot remember. Stress causes confused and distorted memory, confused and distorted thinking, and suppresses the short-term memory. Comes from Joseph Ladeau, a New York University neuroscientist. He wrote a book 15 years ago called The Emotional Brain. Stress causes confused and distorted thinking and suppresses the short-term memory. So let's look at this for a minute. you foster parents, before the social worker arrives, you got another stressed out kid in your house. Maybe you got two or three of them, right? You feel like you want to pull your hair out sometimes, don't you? And then what happens? Get that knock at the door? Huh? We know that. This isn't just about the foster parents, though. What about you social workers? You leave that house feeling like you want to pull your hair out. You get to that door, right? Everything's good. Let me tell you something. 90% of communication is nonverbal. 90% of communication is nonverbal. Alan Shore says the core of the self is nonverbal and unconscious and lies in patterns of affect regulation. Meaning the core of who you are and the core of what you express is nonverbal. It's not what you say or do, it's how you feel when you're doing and saying it. So you can be stressed and you can put that smile on your face, but that person you're interacting with still knows your stress. They still feel it. But here's where we try to trick one another. You smile and you're stressed and I smile back at you. And I'm stressed too, and I know you're stressed, but no one's talking about the stress. We're just smiling. Oh, everything's good. Yeah, that's great. Because stress causes confused and distorted thinking. In the moment of stress, you are operating from fear. It doesn't mean you're scared of the person like they could do you physical harm. Actually, it's much more intense than that. The moment you become stressed, there's a part of your brain called the amygdala. It releases a hormone called cortisol. It's your primary stress hormone. Your amygdala is responsible for your fight, flight, or freeze reaction. The moment you become stressed, your brain starts to release cortisol, and it pours that cortisol past the pituitary over to the hippocampus. And so you have this flood of cortisol, this stress hormone, and it hits your hippocampus. Your hippocampus is responsible for your clear thinking and your short-term memory. That's why in times of stress, your thinking becomes confused and distorted, and your short-term memory is suppressed, because your cortisol is overwhelming your hippocampus. So when that social worker pulls up to the door, and you guys greet one another, and you both put the smile on the face, even though both of you know the other stress, you know you are stressed. Your fear as a foster parent is that you're doing something wrong, or you're going to be judged, or you're going to lose the child. And your fear as a social worker is that you're going to have to take this child with you. And you both know that that's the fear. So you just keep smiling at one another. And then what happens? We are unable to support one another because we're not just being honest and open in our communication. Just because you're stressed out as a foster parent doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It actually doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. When your amygdala gets activated, there's another part of your brain called your brainstem. Your brainstem holds every painful experience you've ever had. Every painful experience you've ever had. And as soon as your amygdala gets activated, it unlocks your brainstem. And your brainstem starts to release those painful memories. Those painful memories have emotions attached to them, and it's all unconscious. You're not thinking about it. It just starts to trigger your body, starts to make you anxious, puts that little anxious smile on your face, gets you all jittery. That's for all of us. So then all of these irrational fears come to the surface. All of these irrational fears come to the surface, and it's not just I'm going to have this child removed, or I'm not doing good enough, or I'm doing something wrong, or I'm messing up. It's not just I'm going to have another child I'm going to have to find a place for. At the bottom of it is I'm going to die. It's that intense. When your brainstem turns on, the most painful experience you've ever had comes to the forefront and starts threatening you to happen all over again. So when you become stressed, you're not just stressed because you got more kids on your caseload than you need. You're not just stressed because you got a child who's been diagnosed with 3 different diagnoses on 2 different medications and school keeps calling you. That's just the surface. Underneath all of that, for some of you, goes all the way back to birth. Not being good enough. Fear of abandonment. Fear of rejection. Fear of being severely punished. Fear of not getting any food. Fear of losing your home. Fear of losing your spouse. It's all buried deep inside of you, and it all becomes very irrational in that moment. And that's why we put the smile on our face. That's why we try to sugarcoat things. That's why we don't really connect. That's why we don't stop. See, someone has to stop. Someone has to stop. Take a deep breath. And say, what's really going on? Someone has to stop and say, this is really hard. And I'm feeling really insecure and really inadequate to take care of this kid. Because until we do that, then we're not in communication. We're not truly exchanging and sharing, imparting information. We're just operating on the surface. But it's really hard to take that kind of risk when in your brainstem, all these bad things may happen. Research says in times of stress, some adults have the ability to regress to infancy. Infancy. When we become stressed, Bruce Perry says we revert to our developmental zone of comfort. Meaning when you stress, you regress. So when you are stressed and overwhelmed, you're not at your chronological age. You're not at your cognitive age. You're at your emotional age. Sometimes we're just adolescents doing the best we can. Sometimes we're just 2-year-olds doing the best we can. And we just need someone to acknowledge us. Because if we can just get some acknowledgement, then we can step up a level. But when we don't get that acknowledgement and when we stay shut off, when we hide, because that's what we do when we're stressed, we hide. Because we try to hide from that pain, we try to hide from that fear, so it's very normal. But it doesn't allow us to be heard, it doesn't allow us to be able to communicate effectively with one another. Now there's a part of your brain called the hypothalamus. This is very important. The hypothalamus releases in the presence of stress a hormone called oxytocin. Oxytocin. Oxytocin is your brain's anti-stress hormone. It's your brain's anti-stress hormone. So I'm gonna give you something very simple. Well, first of all, what you have to understand about oxytocin is it is a learned response in your brain. We don't just get it automatically. Cortisol in your amygdala, that's automatic. So that just happens. Because you need stress to stay alive. You need stress to grow. But when stress becomes overwhelming or prolonged, then it becomes traumatic, and then it starts to damage the brain. But oxytocin is learned. And to, in order to have your oxytocin response developed, you have to have attuned, consistent, predictable caregiving. You have to have present caregiving. You have to have nurturing caregiving. You have to have an environment that's free from violence and stress, overwhelming stress and abuse and drug addiction. You have to have, in order to develop your oxytocin response, you have to have an environment where parents pay attention to you and play with you and listen to you and change your diaper when it's dirty and feed you when you're hungry and give you an environment to explore in. See, that's how you develop a healthy oxytocin response. So then what happens is if we don't grow up with these environments, we grow up with less than ideal oxytocin responses. So that when we become stressed and the cortisol is flooding our brains and flooding our hippocampus and making it really difficult, almost impossible for us to think clearly and to remember. Have you ever said to someone, hey, I saw, remember we used to work with them 3 years ago? That's cortisol affecting your hippocampus. Have you ever walked in the kitchen and said, what the hell did I come here for? That's cortisol impacting your hippocampus. That's your short-term memory. When we don't have that experience of consistency and predictability and attunement and nurturing, our oxytocin response doesn't work as effectively. And then, even when we get it, when we're exposed to prolonged states of stress, our hippocampus begins to suffer and our oxytocin begins to diminish. So here's something very simple for you all on how to revolutionize your communication between yourself as a foster parent and your social worker, or yourself as a social worker and your foster parents. You ready? When you guys see each other for the first time, every time, start with a hug. Start with a hug. Right now, I want you to put your pins down. I want you to stand up, and I want you to give someone a hug. Breathing is the one proven way to interrupt our stress physiology. But the first thing we do when we become stressed is we stop breathing. And I guarantee you, when you're stressed and you answer that door, that smile on your face while you're smiling, you are holding your breath. Because you're stressed. Start with a hug. Take some deep breaths. I don't care how stressful it is. The more stressful it is, the more you need to breathe. The more stressful it is, the longer you need to hug. Because we have to get our brains into a state of regulation. A state of regulation. Regulation is the ability to experience and maintain stress within a window of tolerance. We all have a window of tolerance for how much stress we can handle. We have to be able to stay within our window of tolerance. We have to be able to regulate our brains in order to be able to think clearly and have effective short-term memory. If we don't, we are operating out of survival. Your body only knows two energetic states. It knows surviving and thriving. Those are the only two energetic states your body knows. And emotion is energy in motion. We have to be able to get to a place to stay within our windows of tolerance when it comes to stress. If we can't, we move into dysregulation. And I like that word dysregulation. I like that word dysregulation more than stress. Monday, when you go back to work, and your coworker says, well, how you doing? I want you to say, I'm dysregulated. And they'll be like, what? What? It gets so much more serious. Affect dysregulation is believed to be a fundamental mechanism involved in all psychiatric disorders. What that means is being stressed out. Being stressed out is the fundamental cause of all psychological and emotional and physical disorders. It's estimated that 98% of disease and disorders are related to stress in the autonomic nervous system. Stress is a big deal. When you become stressed out, you are in a state of dysregulation. You're outside of your window of tolerance. And if we are the most important dyad, meaning us foster parents and us social workers, if we're the most important dyad in the lives of these children, we rely on one another. We rely on one another to communicate effectively. And the only way we can communicate effectively is if we can keep our stress within a window of tolerance. And it can be really bad. It can be really bad, and that's okay. Let me hurry up, because I got a couple of other slides I want to talk about. Let's talk about this one. This is important. I use this one in schools. It starts at the bottom. Pretty much everything I do goes from the bottom up. At the bottom is survival and reacting. That's the stage of amygdala and brainstem activation. You can't learn in this state. I'm going to tell you something really important. I'm just going to tell it to you in a different way than I just told it to you 20 minutes ago. When someone is stressed out, they can't learn. If someone is stressed out, they can't hear, they can't learn. You ever been talking to a stressed out person and they just look like they're blanked out? Because they are. And have you ever just kept talking to them? That's because you're stressed out too. Just stop. Just stop. Take some deep breaths and just say, react. Are you with me? But you know why we have a struggle to do that? We struggle to do that because in our brainstem, we have all these anxieties and fears around authority figures. And we see one another as authority figures. We see one another as authority figures because we're adults. We have all this anxiety around authority figures because we grew up with parents who were really tough. They were really tough, and so we actually grew up being pretty afraid of them. And so that's in your brainstem. So when you encounter another adult, what comes up in your brainstem is anxiety. What comes up in your brainstem when you see another adult kind of zoning out on you, and the reason you keep talking is because you're too anxious to slow down and stop them. Because you have this fear in your brainstem that you're going to get in trouble if you do. Because in that moment, you're not really an adult. You're an adolescent or you're a five-year-old. But if you'll stop and if you'll take some deep breaths and you'll move yourself from a place of dysregulation into a place of regulation, you move back up to adulthood. And then when you're breathing, what you're actually doing is turning on oxytocin in your brain. And when you start turning on oxytocin in your brain, what you start doing is you start sending that other person a soothing vibration. And guess what that does? Turns on oxytocin in their brain. And so when you stop talking, when you see they're zoned out, and you take a deep breath, and you say, are you okay? Or are you with me? Let's talk about what's going on. You're actually calming their brain down. When a person is starting to escalate and get agitated, and you can breathe, they're going up, you're going down. You actually bring them down. But when we are in a survival and reacting stage, we are in our amygdala, we're in our brainstem, and we can't learn there. We can't learn in that state. When someone's stressed out, the best thing to do is to not talk to them. If you got something really important, you're a social worker, and you got something really important, you got to have this foster parent understand or hear, and they're stressed out, you are wasting your breath. You're wasting your breath. Just go be present. Just go be present. And breathe and calm yourself down. That helps them calm down, and then you move up to responding. And responding, we start to come back online. We start to be able to pay a little bit more attention. But it's not until we get all the way up to our prefrontal cortex. Your orbital frontal cortex, your executive control center for all of your social and emotional relationships, doesn't complete its development until you're 25 years old. That's if you don't come from a lot of trauma and neglect. If you come from a lot of trauma and neglect, it may be into your 30s before that finally comes fully online. At your executive control center for your social emotional relationships, the only way you get to that stage in your brain effectively without it being completely confused and distorted is if you're regulated. If you're not regulated, you're not thinking clearly and you can't remember. It's that state where we move into thriving. We move into integrating, which is putting the pieces together. I'm not going to have a chance to talk about that. How much time do I have, Sarah?
You have about 20 minutes.
20? Okay, cool. Okay, so let's talk about the three pathways of emotional expression. When we were kids, and your parents told you to go pick up the trash outside, or go clean up your room, go do your homework, and you rolled your eyes, did they jump for joy? You huffed and you puffed, did they say thank you? No. They told you if you roll your eyes one more time, I'm gonna knock your eyeballs in the back of your head. Don't you huff and puff me. You do as I told you to do. That's called an attitude. We have three pathways through which we express energy, which is emotion. We have three pathways. We have attitudes, feelings, and behaviors. Those are the three pathways and the only pathways that we express our energy that allows us to transition from point A to point B. When your parents asked you to go take out the trash and you rolled your eyes and they said, don't roll your eyes at me, what they did was effectively suppress your attitude. But what you were attempting to do in rolling the eyes was transition your energy so you could go take out the trash. When you rolled your eyes, you weren't actually disrespecting your parents, but after generations of conditioning, that's what we believe it is. That's why we are so quick as adults and as parents to tell children, even today, don't roll your eyes at me. Who are you rolling your eyes at? Because after years of conditioning, generations of conditioning, we have taken eye rolling to mean something bad is going to happen. We have taken these little ovals in our skulls, rolling from one side to the next, to be an indicator that something bad is going to happen. Therefore, you better stop it. And so we can get real intense about attitudes, right? Well, if your children can't express through their attitudes, and if you can't express through your attitudes with one another, those get suppressed and you drop to feelings. As a child, could you express your feelings? Usually not. Usually not. Any of you men ever hear suck it up? I'll give you something to cry about. I used to suck it up fast. Because you didn't want no more of that something to cry about. That's feeling expression. Feeling expression is another way that we transition through emotional energy. It's another way we transition to be able to tolerate or accept or do what's been asked of us. It is not a sign of disrespect. It is not a sign of manipulation. It is not a sign of control. It is not a sign that the world is ending and that you're going to die. It is simply an expression of energy. But we've grown up in a society with years, generations of conditioning, generations that say, if you express your feelings to me, something bad's going to happen. It must mean I'm not a good parent, or it must mean I'm not a good person, and it means that you're not a good person. So you need to stop it. And so then we suppress feelings. If you can't express through your attitudes and you can't express through your feelings, guess what you're left with? Behaviors. And for most of us, behaviors certainly weren't okay. But did you ever notice that when you finally could express your attitudes, you could express your feelings, you just started acting out? And you act out in one of two different ways, anger or depression. When you can't express through your attitudes and you can't express through your feelings, you express through your behaviors. And the only expressions you have at that level are anger and depression. Anger and depression must come out through behaviors. Anger and depression must come out through behaviors. I call this the trauma triangle. If you live in this stage of behaviors, anger and depression, behaviors, anger, depression, you are living in an environment of trauma. 6 months or longer, you're living in an environment of trauma. You know what happens at this stage? What happens at this stage is diagnosis, medication, disrupted placements, residential treatment, restraint, violence. That's what happens at this stage. And when we as adults can't express our attitudes and we can't express our feelings, we drop into behaviors. But what if we could express our attitudes and we could express our feelings and we never had to drop down to behaviors? What if, as a social worker, you could express your frustration? You could express your anxiety. You could express your anger. What if your foster parent wasn't attending a class they needed to attend, and you actually could say, that makes me really angry? And they could say, tough. Classes put me to sleep. And you could say, I know, I agree. Give me a hug. What if we could express our attitudes and our feelings freely? We would never have to drop into behaviors. When we drop into behaviors, it means we are not expressing our attitudes and our feelings. That's all it means. When we're in behaviors, it means that we have not been given opportunities to express our attitudes and our feelings. And this not only applies to adults and children, it applies to everyone. It applies to all communication patterns. Attitudes are okay. Attitudes are telling you something. And when you listen to an attitude, as opposed to react to it, then you can help open up communication. When you listen to feelings as opposed to react to feelings, you can open up communication. But if you can't accept attitudes and feelings, we drop to behaviors. And when we drop to behaviors, we can only be angry or depressed and then behave accordingly. me back up just a minute. Let's talk about what trauma is. Trauma is defined as any stressful event which is prolonged, overwhelming, or unpredictable. Any stressful event which is prolonged, overwhelming, or unpredictable. And when that event continues on, unexpressed, unprocessed, and misunderstood, that's the difference between a short-term stressful event and a lifelong, long-term traumatic event. When a stressful experience does not have an opportunity to be expressed, processed, and understood, it can impact you for the rest of your life. I want you all to think about this as individuals. As individuals. As individual adults, I want you to think about the trauma you have experienced in your life and how that trauma impacts your relationships right now. We've all experienced trauma. We've all experienced trauma, and most of us have not had opportunities to express, process, and understand. And when we become stressed, that trauma shows up. John Bowlby said the first 3 years of life establish the blueprints for all of your future relationships. We're talking about us as adults. We're not even talking about the children we serve. The first 3 years of our lives establish the blueprints for all of our future relationships. It actually starts before that. It starts in utero. As early as the fourth week after conception, the fetus can hear. The fourth week after conception. As early as the second trimester, the fetus is capable of psychological processing. By the second trimester, you've been already internalizing everything that's going on around you. What was your birth like? What was your birth like? What were the circumstances surrounding your birth? Where did mom and dad live? Was there a mom and a dad? Was it a safe environment? Was it a nurturing environment? Was there plenty of food? Was there alcohol and drugs? Was there violence? While you were in utero, see, this is all pre-verbal. It's called pre-verbal memories. It's in your brainstem. Pre-verbal memories, it's in your brainstem. The 16-year-old, in a moment of exasperation, she said, "I've never felt like I fit in anywhere." And I said, "It's because your mom didn't want you when she was pregnant with you. She didn't intend to get pregnant with you. And so you carried her feelings. You carried her feelings your whole life. And then you've had all these compounded experiences that just reinforce to you that you don't fit in anywhere." Now, why do you make someone aware of that? So they can become conscious of it. So they can then have control over it. So they can then start to figure out how they do fit in. Instead of always feeling like they don't. Every one of us was impacted intimately and deeply from the time we were in our mama's bellies. And some of our biggest challenges right now come from that stage. And then you've got the birth process. What was your actual birth like? Was it an easy birth? Was it cesarean? Was there too much Pitocin use? Did you have the umbilical cord wrapped around your neck? Were you placed in foster care right after you were born? Those experiences define who you are. And those experiences all show up in our communication with one another. All shows up in our communication with one another when we become stressed. And here's what you gotta understand about trauma. Abuse, neglect, adoption and foster care, frequent moods, chronic pain, emotional absence, prone to depression, and needs left unmet. The thing they have in common is they all occur in the context of human relationships. They all occur in the context of human relationships. And what is this right here? It is a relationship. Our interaction and our working together is a relationship. And the relationship is the most important thing. It is the most important thing. Here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see relationships become the primary focus. I would like to see relationships become the primary focus. Center stage. We are biologically engineered to be in relationship. Your relationship with your social worker, and you as a social worker, your relationship with your foster parents is the most important relationship that exists. We are biologically engineered to be in relationship. And when we start putting relationships first, which means we have to be pretty flexible, which means we have to face some fears and face some anxieties, but when we start putting relationships first, then we're going to win. We're going to start winning, because here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a foster care system where there's only one placement. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a foster placement where there's only one. That's it. And from that place, that child either returns home or they end up adopted. That's what I'd like to see. And then if that's been successful, that one placement is successful, everything's smooth, everything's run like authentically smooth, like the hugs are flowing, the foster parent's happy, the social worker's happy, then and only then do we consider a second placement. Most of the children you are dealing with are enough for one home. When you start putting 2, 3, 4, 5 kids in a home, you are setting up a disaster. And it's an emotional disaster. I would love to see one placement. The only way we get to one placement is through communication. The only way we get to one placement is through relationship. I'd love to see your relationships as foster parents and social workers so connected that there's no more fear. There's no more fear because the kids you have placed in your home are full of fear. That's what they've experienced. I want to see relationships so strong that all that exists is love. Because love is what is going to heal these children. Love is what's going to make your job pleasant and not a drag. Love is what's going to make you enjoy being a foster parent. But as long as we're stressed out and we're scared and we're shut down and we're in survival, then there is no love. There's only fear. I want you to start looking through a new lens. Looking through a new lens. Start seeing fear and start asking yourself, how can I bring more love into this relationship? How can I bring more love and more support into this relationship? Your social workers get stressed out too, and they don't have all the answers. And sometimes they just need you to say, it's okay to not have all the answers. Let's figure it out together. Your foster parents definitely get stressed. And they just need to hear from you that everything's okay. We're going to work it out. We're going to make this happen. We'll figure it out. And we'll just start seeing each other with a new lens. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the conference. God bless each and every one of you.